Blog Talk Radio. Connections that we have which relate to economics, jobs, education, housing, etc. One of the things we are saying this evening is don't give in to the holiday hype. Join the national blackout movement against conspicuous consumption this holiday season. Remember, no justice, no profit. And at this point, I'd like to welcome our panel. We like to say we round up the usual suspects. I'd like to give a shout out to Sister Lynn for the love of Pinky. We have a guest in the house already. I see 605 1537 and 205-0085 to acknowledge that we know you're in the house. Brother Ralph, are you ready?
Yes, I am. And let us do our usual introduction. Overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Where is it, Betty? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Okay.
We're here.
Okay. All right. One of the things we have discussed over the months that we've been on is the idea that we are not living in a democracy. One of the things that showed up today, I believe those of us who watch Amy Goodman recognize lies that are told to people constantly, and it seems that no one notices. Now, happened in France. That is,
you're fading in and out. You're fading in and out.
The French imperialist government. Can you hear?
In and out. I told you.
Hello.
You faded out completely. You have faded out completely. Ralph, are you there?
Another line.
There is nothing on the airwaves right now. Nothing.
Hello? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, good. The thing we're talking about is chickens coming home to roost for imperial powers. Now, we know the French were one of the outstanding or vicious imperial powers of the world. And has anyone forgotten the Vietnam War? Has anyone forgotten that the United States stood shoulder to shoulder with Vietnam? And has anyone forgotten that the Vietnamese people won their struggle for freedom? One of the things I'd like to point out is how we learn and how we sometimes do not learn from history. Now, there was a situation in Europe between 1930 and 1945 at the end of the Nazi regime where for oppressed people to survive was victory. And then we had that continuous position in the black community in America, that is present black day America, where people feel it to endure, merely endure, is victory. But yet we can look at the Vietnamese and listen to what Ho Chi Minh said, and what he had said, victory at any cost. And what we are seeing today is oppressed people from nations around the world, and I'm talking about suicide bombers and people who readily give up their life for liberation, that we're looking at victory at any cost. And so let's get on the program, and I hope you heard my opening statement. And I'll end with the final lines. Our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time for anyone who missed that. And I had mentioned what was happening in France, with the premier caught in a bold lie, but nobody seems to notice. Talking about those who came to protest the global warming were those who destroyed the images and the candles and the mementos who were left to honor and remember the people who were killed in some of the sieges and battles that were fought. The innocent people. And we're going to have to go over that issue as to who are the innocents, if there are innocents in this world struggle, and who must be responsible or accept responsibility for it. And those of us in the progressive community say we have to look at ourselves, and we have to look to people who have recognized the privilege that they have received from being a Roman citizen, that is V being a citizen of the empire, and I would go on to say people of color want to be citizens of the empire because we have never been citizens. Now, that group of people, the wannabe citizens of the empire, are those who will serve the empire to do to others what the empire has done to others for hopes, as Malcolm X put it, for a few crumbs off of the table. Now, we in the progressive community say America must be changed. They must stop fighting with the imperialist and side with oppressed people at home and abroad. Now, one of the things I read last week, and I won't go over it, the number of people in the world, around the world, who protested against global warming. But now we see a situation in Paris where they're merely going to codify the continuation of global warming, and we are still marching. And it's just an amazing situation where we in America say we're going to vote for a Democrat, Obama, who's going to make it better. We're going to vote for Hillary Clinton, who's going to make it better, when it is so obvious that it merely codifies our acceptance of the dictatorship of the two-party system. And so without continuing, I'm going to allow other people to come in and give us a few facts or help us out to understand what's going on, and I'm going to go to Larry Pinckney. Larry, are you with us? And I hope you are not so snowed under up in Minneapolis. Are you there, Larry?
Yes, brother, I'm here. It's, as always, I would like to greet everyone, first and foremost, our audience, and of course, sister, our beloved sister, Lynn Stewart, and of course, Betty Davis, who is just an incredible sister and carries on in the struggle, not to mention you, Brother Ralph Poynter. I'm going to be, as I always try to be, succinct. The bottom line that we are facing in this nation, and not only in this nation, the United States, but actually throughout Mother Earth, throughout the world, is that black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, that is to say, everyday, ordinary people, oppressed people, are rising up. We are rising up in legitimate anger against the blood-sucking, avaricious corporations, the government that is, of course, controlled by the corporations, who are blood-suckers, nothing more and nothing less. Barack Obama, Mr. Hope and Change, Mr. Drone Man, Mr. I'll Lie as I Go Along Man, has proven himself crystal clear to be nothing more than an empty suit on behalf of his corporate masters, and we need to understand that and act accordingly. The fact of the matter is just a few months ago, in fact, it wasn't even 2 months ago, it was about a month and a half ago, memory serves me correct, that none other than Barack Obama was in Chicago praising the police in this country. That is to say, praising the police who have been shown to have been murdering and are continuing to murder, to execute as judge, jury, and executioner, to murder people in this nation, most particularly young black men. Not only young black men, but most particularly young black men, as happened just a couple of weeks ago in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where Jamar Clark was executed by these lunatic police. And of course, now in Chicago, moving on to Chicago, I understand that today the police chief or superintendent, as they call him in Chicago, resigned. Who should have resigned, who should be removed, is the entire city council, and beginning with Mayor Rahm Emanuel, the apartheid Zionist mayor of Chicago. In any event, whether we're talking about Cleveland, Baltimore, Kansas City, New York, et cetera, whatever, all over the United States, Oakland, California, Los Angeles, California, et cetera, all over this nation, the fact of the matter is that black lives will never matter until we as a people collectively say that we will accept no more. We will no longer tolerate the subordinate position as nothing more than 21st century slaves. And I want to send out a message to those Negroidians and their counterparts out there who are nothing more than gatekeepers, systemic gatekeepers, who work right along with their white racist counterparts. You see, this is not only or simply about color. It's about the fact that poor people, be they black, white, brown, red, or yellow, have been designated to be expendable. And until such time as we as a people collectively say that we are not expendable, then we will continue to be treated as cannon fodder for America's wars in Libya, as they destroyed the legitimate government of Libya under Gaddafi, as they lied about so-called weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and destroyed that government, and as Obama and his minions, yes, Barack Obama, wake up, people. Obama despises you. No matter what he says, watch what he does. What he says are lies. We must understand this, and we must do something about it, because only we can do something about it. So having said that, I want to quickly segue to our political prisoners. I received a message today indicating that Reverend Edward Pinckney, though still imprisoned at Marquette, which is a horrible prison, is no longer in solitary confinement. That's the message I received. I'm assuming it's correct. But in any event, he is under harsh conditions, as are all of our political prisoners, whether it's Leonard Peltier, whether it's Mumia Abdul-Jamal, whether it's Robert Seth Hayes, whether it's endless lists that won't be missed. It goes on and on. We must support our political prisoners, because in so doing, we support ourselves and each other. I'm going to end this right now and thank all of you, Sister Lynn Stewart, Sister Betty Davis, and you, Brother Ralph Pointer. I'm going to end this by saying we must succeed. We must educate, organize, agitate. All power to the people. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that, Larry. And along with that, you know, understanding our value, the question comes up is, how much is your child worth? In that situation in Chicago, everyone knew about the situation within a couple days of it happening. They decided then not to make it public because it was just before an election where Rahm Emanuel knew he was in trouble. And had the woman who was the head of the teachers union run, she would have beaten them. But due to chicanery of the black politicians in having a black so-called liberal black politician run against Chuy Garcia to split the liberal vote, and this is how Rahm Emanuel got in. And so among these machinations was to keep this information secret, then make a deal with the parents of the killed child, and the part of the deal was they were to keep their mouth shut for $5 million. And so I say to you, how much is your child worth? And those people who are those people who read the Bible talk about, repeat, the selling of one's birthright. What is your birthright worth? Well, we have to ask people who make agreements like that, what is your child's life worth? We must begin to understand that and look to ourselves, as you have said, Larry, for the answers, not with an Obama or anyone like that. I see Ann Lamb is on, ready to give us information on political prisoners. Are you there, Ann?
I am here, Ralph.
Could you give us more information on political prisoners that dealt with at Jericho Representative this week?
All right, this week we have several things going on. One is that Robert Seth Hayes, our beloved BPP, BLA, imprisoned comrade in the gulag at Sullivan, you know, they took him out to the hospital. He was up in Albany last week. Now they took him back to Sullivan on Saturday past. And so he's now been there for like a week. And they have him in the infirmary, which might sound like a good thing, but apparently it's not. And when he first got back from the hospital, he was doing really well. You know, he felt much better. His lungs were clear. His legs were not swollen. Well, now his legs and feet are swelling up again. His cough is coming back, et cetera, et cetera. Yves Rozon actually went to see him today. That's his lawyer. So I was hoping to get a report from her before this time, but that did not happen. So hopefully the next show will have a definite update. But obviously, you know, they're actively trying to kill the man, no question about it. Just like the case with Mumia, you know, which there's for Mumia, there's a court hearing on December 18th. I'm sure that Lynn will probably talk more about that later. I just sent that out today. And then also, so we have this pending thing with Seth, which we'll have more information as soon as possible. And then I also received a letter from Jaleel Muntakim, a.k.a. Anthony Bottom. And he is at Attica. And he's been having a serious trouble with some books, right? They were originally approved by the package room. There were four books, including his own book, which is Escaping the Prism, with foreword by Ward Churchill, his new version of that. And when he went to get them, he was told by one particular CO in the package room, oh, no, you can't have them, and if you don't send them out, they're going to be destroyed, right? So he sent them to our friends at Burning Books Buffalo, right? Another one of our former political prisoners, Leslie, is up there. And so he sent them out to Burning Books, and they did get them. And he also sent them some money to have the books, you know, returned. And so then when they were arrived once again on Friday the 13th, Julia was again told he could not receive the books from the same, as he says, from the same canine who denied them the first time. So what he did now was he sent the books to Charles Barron's office, as the enclosed letter indicates. At your earliest convenience, please post this letter to Assemblyman Barron along with his office phone number, 518-455-5912, and ask people to call his office and encourage him to investigate book banning at Apartheid Attica and for him to support my next parole hearing in June. Ultimately, the issue of the book must be parlayed into building support for my next parole hearing. Needless to say, rather than fighting for books in Attica, the ultimate goal is to win release for parole. Also, tell folks to contact their state elected officials and request they investigate the banning of books in Attica and urge them to support the passage of the Safe Parole Reform Act. In an effort to develop the Free Jaleel Campaign Committee, it is anticipated this battle will further inspire activists to consider getting involved in what will be a six-month campaign leading to June 2016. So this is the letter that he sent to Charles Barron. It's not too long. Assemblyman Barron, it is my sincere hope this finds you in the very best of health and high spirits. As for myself, it is struggle as usual dealing with the madness that is Apartheid Attica. I hope you remember visiting me 10 years ago in Auburn in preparation for my parole board hearing. Since then, I have been seen by the parole board 8 times, the 9th parole hearing scheduled for June 2016. However, my reason for writing is not so much an issue with the parole board, but rather with the banning of books in Apartheid Attica. As the enclosed informs, I have been in a dispute with Attica administrators about the receipt of books. I have followed the rules of the directives as it pertains to the receipt of books from bookstores and publishers, yet I'm being denied the receipt of specific books, including one that I authored. I've written to the superintendent at this facility and the commissioner's office to resolve this matter. We also went so far as to have friends and supporters initiate a phone campaign to the commissioner's office for Albany to investigate this problem. I was forced to send the books out to a Buffalo bookstore after the original rejection. I then sent money from my prison commissary to the bookstore, reordering the books, and upon arrival, again, I was told I could not receive the books as indicated in the enclosed documents. I don't know what the enclosed documents were. He didn't send them to me. At my wit's end, I forward the books to your office, and I am requesting your assistance to inquire why these specific books are being banned. It is especially disconcerting when I am told to follow a specific protocol procedure to obtain the books, and having done so, am still denied receipt of the books. I realize this is not an issue specific to your office area of expertise and concern. However, this problem is particular to the issue of prison and parole reform, book banning, of which I know you advocate. My sincere hope is after your review of the books, especially my own, you will conclude there is a problem that your office is willing to intervene in my behalf. Please note, when I had the books sent to you, I inadvertently sent the books to room 529 rather than your office number of room 532. I am confident either the mail office or the assistant in room 529 will ensure your office receipt of the books. Again, this is my last-ditch effort to raise the question and problem of book banning at this prison. I sincerely hope you will view this matter in the continuity of relegating prisoners to miseducation and the resulting recidivism of ignorance. Thank you for seriously considering this problem, and I wish you, Jeffrey Ann Aubrey, and Bellamette Montgomery, etc., success in your efforts for the passage of the Safe Parole Reform Act. Very truly yours, Anthony Jaleel Bottom. So he was very perturbed by this because, you know, they were approved by the package room. So this one particular CO, whose name he did not give me yet, has denied him twice, just, you know, because he doesn't like Jaleel's face or, you know, for whatever reason.
Well, Ann, let me cut into you at this point because there
That's
are 10,000...
That's the end of that. I know you have many...
Just like that. I think it's called arbitrary authority, arbitrary,
right.
Unjust authority, and we must remember they are not in prisons, they are in death camps.
Absolutely.
Death of the party by denying them medical help, and death of the spirit by denying them access to anything that is political, logical, or anything that would help them maintain their sanity. And so, you know, continue the good work, and if you have any other prisoners you'd like to raise at this moment, please do so, and if not, we're going to switch to Lynn Stewart, if it's okay with you, and get
always
up a
okay
up.
With me to switch to my dear sister Lynn Stewart.
Okay, Lynn, are you there to give us news on people we are fighting to support?
Indeed, and my dear sister Ann Lamb is always so thorough, and she brings up all the issues, and it is really refreshing to have someone who is so dedicated in the struggle. That is what we could use 100, 1,000 Ann Lambs, let me tell you. Anyway, I wanted to just raise once again, I mentioned it last week, but fairly fleetingly, my prison daughter. This was a young woman, young to me, that I met when I was at Carswell. She was recommended to me by one of the more decent guards, and her story was so horrific that I was determined that I would help her then, and I did so, and I've continued to help her ever since. She is named Pat Clark. She's 43 years old. She is not a political prisoner, except insofar as she is a member of a class, poor and black, that this hammer of oppression targets with deadly accuracy. She has had the worst possible legal representation. I'm not going to repeat it. You can go to my website, Justice for Lynn Stewart, and you can read the whole, my recounting of her legal situation. I just want to say that we cannot forget that it is not only our political prisoners, but it is our entire political situation that cries out for a degree of leniency and mercy which they are not about to give, which we must learn to force them to give up on. And I must say I was gratified yesterday to see in the New York Times editorial page a editorial by that august body, and I say that with a certain degree of sarcasm, and they have done a piece on women behind bars in which they talk about that women incarcerated are particularly heavily burdened because they have not only the burden of their own incarceration, but the burden of their family, their children, and anyone who has ever been in a prison visiting room and seen women with their children. It is really heartrending. Pat Clark does not have any children. She is alone. She sought me out because she needed help. I will continue to help her, and I hope everyone else has got the information. There is a leniency being asked for from he who gives no quarter. He will pardon the Thanksgiving turkey, but not our political prisoners, his political prisoners, because but for a quirk of fate, he could, because of the color of his skin, also be a target of murderous cops. And while I'm on that subject, I just fleetingly want to say that we are all saturated with the news of the climate change, and I want to echo my dear Ralph when he talks about our concerns. And I have to say that for me, my concern is black 12-year-olds in Cleveland whose life is stolen away by ruthless, shameful cops. We can't change the world for all of the 12-year-olds who are black or of color in this world. Then I say, let it burn. Let the floodwaters rise. Let us not prolong the immediacy of those lives behind a veil of so-called climate tears. We have immediate concerns. We have got a charge to do the right thing, to rescue our older and wise political prisoners, and to save the coming generations from what has been programmed for them since day one, which I believe is genocide and elimination. And that is why the police state is permitted over and over and over to have the most outrageous conduct excused, covered up, or go unpunished. I don't usually get this a rant and rave, but it just seems to me that we can talk about climate change, but let's talk about a change in our own climate, the climate of death, which exists in the black community. Thanks, Ralph.
Okay, thank you so much, Lynn. And let me add to that. When we defend those who defended us, I'm talking about our political prisoners who used armed struggle to free us and defend us, when we don't defend them, we're giving up defense of ourselves. And I guarantee it, until we defend them, we will continue to be shot down in the streets. There will be continued injustice of no indictment to the killer cops. And while I'm on that, I'm only going to take a moment to say it is not so much these killer cops that I am concerned about. What I'm mostly concerned about is those police officers of color who we fought to get jobs in the 60s based on color. We need our own people, we said, policing our communities. Not one or maybe one. I remember a police officer of color in Philadelphia who spoke out against the police who were doing these criminal acts. And so we have a silence of people of color in uniform. We have a silence of a political party, and I'm naming the Democratic Party, which black people belong to, on this issue of killer cops. And it can only come to one conclusion, that is, we are living in a police state, and so far, most of us are going along with it. With that said, I'm going to turn over to Betty Davis.
Once again, I want to salute our panelists and thank our sister Ann Lamb and Lynn and Brother Larry, who have enlightened us so far. And we're going to open up our mic to one of our guests. I need our panelists and our guests to listen carefully. I'm going to read the first three digits and then the last four digits of your number. 205, and the last four digits are 5401. We've opened up your mic. 205, the last four digits are 5401. Are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Are you available to speak this evening? And would you, you know, identify your organization or your concern at this time?
Yes, ma'am. My name is Mercutio Terrell Southall, senior. I'm with Black Lives Matter Birmingham. Actually, I'm with a whole bunch of different organizations. I just kind of float. But yeah, people know me more from Black Lives Matter.
And are you have any relationship with David Gespatz?
Yes, my lawyer.
Lawyer's attorney?
Yeah, I was supposed to be on a little bit earlier. I have a 8-month-old baby, and he was not being cooperative during this time.
I understand. So give us your circumstances.
We're
going to
open up David's mic.
We're going to open up David's mic also. 205. 2530 is the end of David's. Okay. We're going to open up that mic, too. And give us the reason why you called in this evening. Hello?
Well, basically, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, is David on the line?
Hello?
Yes, David's on the line. Go ahead, both
yes,
of you.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
All right.
What?
Please,
what
the situation.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Explain the situation, sir?
Yes, please give us the situation. I spoke with Davis Gespatz. He's the attorney from Birmingham, Alabama, and who was the president of the National Lawyers Guild, past president of the National Lawyers Guild. And we talked about your situation, but I'd like the audience to understand what we're talking about. So could you go through the situation you are in?
Basically, a couple of days ago, I was pretty much lynched in broad daylight down here in Birmingham, Alabama at the BJCC at the Trump rally. People have been talking about it like all over the country. People have been commenting on it, but I haven't really been out speaking a whole bunch on it. I've been trying to get some stuff together, make sure that I'm okay physically. But now I'm trying to let people know the kinds of things that what happened on that day, as well as the kind of stuff that was happening down here previous to that, that led up to like the police basically like ignoring. Not necessarily ignoring me, because I was followed by the police agencies the whole time I was there, but they definitely were complicit in the lynching, quote unquote. I don't know how much you guys talk about for or if anybody
tell us what
that,
happened. You attended a Trump rally.
Basically, we went in with the mindset like Birmingham is a 75% black city, and Donald Trump had been making very, very disparaging remarks, to say the least, about blacks and Latinos. Me along with some other people felt like, you know, he shouldn't if you have that many negative things to say about blacks and Latinos, then you need to stay out of a 75% black city with all that rhetoric. And he came, and we were some people with the National Action Network got a permit to protest outside, which I don't think they'll be doing anymore because they got the permit and the police made them be a block over and down, so nobody from the venue even knew they were there. You know, if they were just stood on their First Amendment rights to be there, I'm pretty sure things would have went differently, but that's neither here nor there. Me and a brother, Mark Miles, had got there early to get a place in line, and immediately from the get-go, we were pretty much I won't say ostracized, but we definitely stood out. It was like three to 6 feet of space on either side of us, and this is a line with at least about 2,000, 3,000 people, not the 10,000 that Donald Trump was saying. There was plenty of room left in the venue, trust me. You can tell that from the venues. I mean, from the videos. So we get there, and we're waiting in line, and people are, like, staying away from us the whole time that we were there, noticeably. So we automatically, like, felt that we weren't welcome. But stayed in line. Brother Mark had to go somewhere and handle something. So Sister Alicia Irby, another member of Black Lives Matter Birmingham, Black Lives Matter Selma, the 21st Century, she came to go inside with me, and we went on ahead inside. Once I made it inside, the Birmingham police immediately recognized me, and they had a meeting on the inside, and they set up a because that's definitely the wrong word to use.
They were protecting everyone from you.
Pretty much. They were following me, but they definitely were not protecting me whatsoever, as you can see on the video. But let me not get ahead of myself. So they had a meeting and made sure they had a loose security cordon around me the entire time that me and Alicia were in there. The whole time we were in there, we weren't being disruptive or anything. Like, we were trying to find a place closer to the stage. We were engaging the people in the crowd, having conversations with people, listening to the things that Donald Trump was saying. And after about 30, 40 minutes of trying to find a way closer to get to the stage, Carlos came inside from outside. He was immediately noticeable because Carlos is a tall, skinny guy, and, like, honestly, you know, there wasn't that many black people in the room, so if you turn, you know, you would notice. Like I said, like, space opens up around the black people. It's like, you know, you'll see a black person walk in, and then, like, even though people are, like, crushed in close to the stage to try to be able to say something to Donald Trump, if you see, like, a black person in the crowd, there's, like, space around them. Like, it was absolutely ridiculous. But Carlos comes in, and he has his phone above his head, and he's saying, I'm live streaming from Periscope inside the BJCC. We wanted to definitely let Donald Trump know that he's not welcome here, and we need to dump the Trump. Now, he said this. He's not chanting or being abrasive, being disruptive or anything at this point. As soon as he says this, a tall white male, about, you know, he was about 6'1", 6'2", like, red hair, like, in a butt, kind of in a buzz cut, slaps his phone out of his hand. So Carlos, like, so that's assault, like, as far as I'm concerned. So Carlos, you know, reacted the way that anybody would, you know, don't knock, you know, don't touch my ass, you know, don't touch my stuff, you know. He didn't say the word stuff, you know, trying to, as David said, clean up my language. I'm trying my best. But so Carlos was understandably upset, but Carlos is, like, you know, he's a tall, skinny guy, and he looks like he's about 12, you know. So I kind of, like, pushed him to the side, and I stepped up to the guy and stood in his face. You know, the guy was like, well, you know, what are you going to do about it, nigger? And, you know, again, like, I stepped up in his face, like, as soon as he got out there. So, like, happened within the span of a couple of seconds. But when I stood close to the guy and was, you know, standing there in the face or whatever, like, he was not nearly as animated and brave as he was with Carlos. So after a couple of seconds of sitting there, I smiled at him, you know, as I do, and I turned, got Carlos and Alicia, and we started moving towards the stage where Donald Trump was. At that point, we started chanting, you know, Black Lives Matter, Dump the Trump, things of that nature. Pretty much was the mindset. Well, you know, we didn't start it, but you know, we're definitely gonna.
And then what happened?
We're definitely here, so we're gonna, you know. So we're moving toward the stage, and immediately people started turning around and paying attention to where we were headed. People immediately started trying to make a wall in between us and the stage. People started like shoving, saying that we were shoving while shoving us, like, which is, you know.
Anderson.
So, like, you start hearing slurs. Go ahead. What were you saying? What did you ask?
I said standard procedure. Doing
standard
something
procedure.
And blaming you doing it.
Pretty much. So while we're trying to move to the crowd, through the crowd and saying Black Lives Matter, you hear people start saying All Lives Matter, and the people are getting more and more incensed that we would have the audacity to say something about, you know, Black Lives Matter. And obviously we were in a very hostile environment. So again, the people became incensed and started like shoving, pushing, calling, at first when Carlos and Alicia are there, they weren't saying as much. They weren't being vocal, besides saying All Lives Matter. But as soon as the pushing and shoving starts again, like, I kind of take care of people. So I move to the front. And, you know, then the pushing got real intense, and I stopped. I didn't see Carlos or Alicia anymore, like, period. I don't know what happened, but I just didn't see them anymore. Like I said, the pushing started getting more and more intense. The crowd started getting more and more intense. And you start hearing stuff like monkey, nigger, you know, your life doesn't matter, all lives matter. And, the pushing got so intense, like, from so many different directions, like, I ended up on the ground, on the bottom of a pile of people. And again, I would like to bring it back to, like, the fact that when I walked in, the police already knew that I was there. So the security team, whatever, all security agencies were there from the Secret Service, because they were in charge of making sure people didn't get anything in. Secret Service was there, Birmingham Police was there, TSA was there. I'm not mistaken, some people from the BJCC was there. All those security teams that were working together, and the teams that were working together following me, they saw all this go on, but no one interjects. No one does anything up at this point. So I'm at the bottom of a pile. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
If that doesn't tell us whose lives matter and whose lives do not matter, I don't know what would. But then how did David Gespas get involved in this?
David Gespas has been like a staunch ally with Black Lives Matter in Birmingham since we did our initial protest here, like, almost a year ago. It'll be a year ago in a couple of weeks. So he was already involved. He never left from that, you know, from the word jump. So when this happened, I immediately called him and let him know what had transpired.
In a few words, what is this? I can guess,
lynching.
But I want to.
It was not just a lynching, like, it was a Birmingham police sanctioned lynching, like, in broad daylight, a couple of blocks away from the Civil Rights Museum, a couple of blocks away from the 16th Street Baptist Church, in one of the main cities that led the Civil Rights Movement. Like, I was lynched. Like, that's how I feel. Watch the video. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The state-sanctioned beatdown by racist...
Lynching, state-sanctioned lynching, yeah.
Okay, well, you're not dead, but it was a beatdown by racist Trump supporters and
hey, just because I survived happened. Does not mean that it was not a lynching. Like everything was there.
Right.
Even the you know, back in the day, Birmingham police were complicit in it. And again, like, you know, from video evidence alone, they were complicit in this one also. You actually see while people are chanting "All Lives Matter" and people are coming, moving in and out of the crowd, hitting me and moving back into the crowd. You see an officer, the black officer, the black guy in front of me with the gray suit on that you see in the video, that is a Birmingham police officer. And if you look closely, the guy that makes a little gets in the fighting stance, he was choking me. The Birmingham police officer was trying his best to keep my hands from doing anything while this guy is choking me.
Well, that tells again about our police officers. David, what do you have to say about that? Are you there, David? We've opened up your line. Okay, go ahead. Continue. Hello?
Me or David?
You. David hasn't spoken up yet. Continue.
Okay, so again, like, and it's so sad because, like, I actually know that officer. I knew that officer and the only other black officer I saw there. I was in the academy with the other officer. And that officer right there, like, I did security at a place on his beat. Me and him had numerous conversations. But at that time, like, you know, he was definitely, like, definitely not protecting me. You know, definitely not he was definitely not there for my interests, like, at all. Like, I definitely didn't feel that. So if you look really closely at the video, around the time that the guy's choking me and, you know, I start really trying to, when I was throwing the punch, I was really trying to get back at the guy, cause he had been choking me, kicking me, punching me, like everything. They were keeping me away from him, but if you look at the back of the black officer, you actually see, a white woman from the crowd reaches out and grabs his jacket. She grabs his back, so she's about to start in on him, and you see a Secret Service agent snatch her hand off of him. You know, I say, not this one right here. He's on our side. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. And then you got Agent Edwards from Birmingham, and I say agent because he's the press coordinator for Birmingham Police Department, but he just graduated from the FBI Academy. They made a big show of it, put an article out on AL.com and everything. So this agent comes out and says that you have to be careful with Mercutio because he's an agitator. He's always the agitator. And saying that Birmingham Police Department is not pursuing charges on anybody at this time because no officer witnessed any of the assaults that went on. Now,
okay.
Again, that speaks toward the credibility and who the department really protects because, again, I was followed the entire time I was there. If you watch the video, you can see people hitting me without actually being there. But these officers were actually there, and one of their own officers was about to get pulled in and lynched himself. He was about to get lynched himself, but he was still doing the best he could to keep me from defending my life.
Okay, so we get a real picture there, and I have one more question on this. I would suggest that everyone watch this video. Now, tell us how we could get the video. And if David Gaspas, your attorney, is on, I would like to hear his response as to how he sees what has happened. All mics are open. Go ahead. I guess he's no longer online. And so now tell us how we can get to this video.
Honestly, like it's pretty much everywhere right now. You can Google me, Mercutio Southall, and the video will come up. I think CNN.com has it.
Go slow and give us your name. Spell it.
Mercutio, last name Southall.
Okay, if we Google that, we will get the picture.
Yes, sir. It'll be. I've been an activist for quite a while, so it'll be some other articles up there, but that video should be in the line.
And I think your situation covers much of what we're talking about when we say black lives have never mattered, and we know who people of color are in office and in uniform. They do not represent the black interest or the interest of the oppressed. Betty,
no, it's
like
white supremacy and blackface.
One of the things I'd like to comment on, and then we're going to open up the mic to the Lakota Elder, is that I attended the UN hearing on the plight of Africans all over the globe. And one of the participants, I believe it was a Lutheran minister, said, if there is a fire, a house on fire in a block, you don't say all houses matter. You go to the house that has the fire so that the fire doesn't spread to other people's houses. So when people say all lives matter, you tell them, what do you want to do? Do you want to put the fire out, or do you want the fire to spread? And
I think Birmingham, that Trump rally pretty much proves what people mean when they say all lives matter.
Exactly.
If you're chanting all lives matter while you're stomping somebody and kicking somebody and choking somebody, they're saying black lives matter. All lives matter is and has always meant, like, shut up, nigga. That's what all lives matter means. You never see all lives matter have a rally. You never see All Lives Matter going out to the community. You never heard of them organize anything. They only come out when people say Black Lives Matter. Again, the rally showed in black and white, literally, what All Lives Matter means.
Okie doke. We understand that, and we're all going to be looking at the video and to find out where this is going. I'm going to turn to David. I see you're on there, 2530. Would you tell us where this is going?
Well,
go ahead, David.
Remains.
Your mic is open.
Okay, and I am.
Yes.
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. And I told everyone who you were, attorney
Mercutio South on Black Lives Matter here in Birmingham.
Okie doke. And so I imagine you will be carrying this case somewhere to someone to deal with the injustices that have been done. But one of the things I would like to remind everyone is we have this issue of black preachers. I watched one on television today supporting Trump, and I'm reminded of a right-wing Republican running for governor of New Jersey years ago, and he got a surprise victory. And they asked the a voter or the manager how to do it, how it was done, and he says he went down to the black community, talked to the preachers with envelopes. And so the preachers are playing their role. We'll look forward to hearing you again next week, and we're switching mics. Lynn, David, are you finished there?
If I could say just one thing, we are planning on doing some stuff in the next 2 or 3 days. So by the end of the week, we should be having something out about what we are asking people to do to support Mercutio and to get the from my perspective, this is a hate crime, and it should be investigated by the Birmingham Police Department. And we're certainly going to ask for people to give us support in trying to get the police to do what they obviously do not want to do and will not do unless they are forced, in much the same way as the Chicago police and the mayor were forced to reveal the murder of McDonald.
Okay, and thank you, and we'll look forward to hearing from you next week, and we're going to switch on to the Lakota chief who spoke with us last week. Are you there?
I am there.
Okay, would you give us a quick background on your conversation from last week and carry it forward?
Well, first of all, I would love to do that, but I've been listening to you guys talk about a number of important things happening in my country, okay? And it's happening
yes.
in my country. And by sitting back and listening to you guys, and I mean you guys, and don't get offended by it, don't cut me off, and listen to what I'm going to say. Over the years, I've seen struggles like this unfold right before our eyes. And because of the current circumstances, are because we as people, I don't care what color creed we are, we're not putting the blame on the white race. We're talking about it. The only time we're ever going to get any type of issue addressed with its full intent by allowing other nations outside my waters to look at this problem is when we point the finger directly at the white race. Every time people of color step up to make a difference and change, we got generations behind us that are coming. Some are yet unborn. But we all talk about these things in a matter perspective. But if they're not going to be an issue, just like here on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservations where grandmothers and children cannot eat because of taxpaying dollars, because of treaty obligations, because of all these international legislative powers that come from different countries eliminating that basis to neutralize the independence of Native people and many others of that color. Then and only then can you see the white race continue to assert its, arrogant, bully proportion of power. Why do I call it proportion of power? Because you just said it, bestly. Nobody is blaming on him, but yet we want to draw support, okay? No offense to my brothers and sisters when they're attacked by them. Indian man was shot and murdered here in Rapid City, South Dakota, last Friday. Just because he opened up a can of Vienna sausage and he was hungry. But while he was eating it and then he got to the checkout stand, he put more than enough for that little can. It's only 50 cents. But he put a $5 bill at the counter and he walks out. Doesn't care about the change, and you give him that. The man's hungry. So right away, white America deems it a theft. But not knowing the circumstance when it's videotaped in camera in Walmart, they watched it, the officer pumps 5 rounds on the side of his face. That's cold-blooded murder, if you ask me. But wait a minute. It doesn't matter what the circumstances, just as long as the law enforcement get to serve the purpose for the rich. This is what's happening here, but we're not doing that. So when people of color are going undermined, which is happening again, we are pointing the finger at the things that don't mean a thing to us because it's him creating that. So this is why we're in these circumstances right now. And I listen to this over and over, and I thank Mary Neal for giving us this opportunity to come here. But I urge people, even in your listening audience, to contact Senator John Thune, Senator Kristi Noem of South Dakota, and Senator Michael Rounds, and the Health and Human Service Department in Washington, D.C., and the Justice Department, Mr. Tracy Tolu. Get these people involved to investigate the white society's little brothers, known as half-breeds, here on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation because of all the taxpaying dollars being spent at their discretion. This is why these grandparents that died here 2 weeks ago, white America, you're to blame. I've told you that national radio. And everybody that interviews Native people for this purpose, I'm going to blame you guys, too, for committing murder. because you've done nothing to look at this problem against the eyes of the beholder. And when these black people are insulted, they're assaulted by white, you know, privilege, white structure, God dang it, you are all guilty of that because you're doing nothing to save them, help them. We've seen it. We still live it. And my heart goes out to the African race, black race, whatever you want to call them, because they too were stripped of their identity, language, culture, and name. You did it, white man. Nobody's blaming you for that. So this is why it continues to serve that purpose. A majority of the people that I've listened tonight on your show are not really blaming the system. And that's where it matters. It really matters right there. Until we point the finger at them, then we can start finding solutions and ways to heal this problem. It's never going to go away as you continue to serve the purpose to allow Richie Rich to serve you with all this heinous behavior at America's Eurocentric bipolar disorder by his father, Rome. And I rest my case. I'm tired of this. I'm tired of listening to radio shows when you guys are talking about, you know, put the damper on the white man for a change. Enough of all this. We don't have the opportunities to get on radio shows because it's a media blackout. But the only time it accounts for somebody is when the white race becomes a victim. That's when everybody wants to be in the mainstream. And you all know that. You all know that.
Well,
radio blogs like this is the same thing. And the gentleman talking there, Peter, listen to me, young man. Our people, the city where you live in New York, is so highly secured that you, as a person, talking about freedom and all these things, you too are still incarcerated. Until you take that yoke of slavery off and get rid of that number, then and only then can your freedom begin. But you too, that's why I'm listening to it. It frustrates me.
All right.
You always want to interrupt people.
Okay,
you should interrupt yourself and listen.
Okay, I've listened, and let me go to a fundamental thought that we have here. I want everybody to know all mics are open. First of all, the people on this program, most have been incarcerated for fighting this system. I'm not talking about 15 minutes. I'm talking about years. Larry Pinckney, the first gentleman who came on, 10 years he fought his case. He understands perfectly what you're talking about. Myself, having been in jail and organized a prison revolt, I understand perfectly. But let me go to someone and who happens to be white, who says it very well. Her name is Helen Keller. We all know her. And what she says is, when one comes to think of it, there are no such things as divine, immutable, or inalienable rights. Rights are things we get when we are strong enough to make good our claim on them. Now, we've been fighting to make our claim on them, and as Lynn Stewart said, there are immediate problems. As Betty Davis said, our house, we must deal with that fire. And we also recognize what has happened to the indigenous people here. And as a matter of fact, when we talk about African socialism, we say capitalism is built on the backs of Africa through the lives of African people and the materials of Africa. And they continued. When after going to the Congo, the European countries I'm talking about, the European empires, going to Africa and raping the land and then bringing those materials to America most recently and turning them into the America you see today. And as far as understanding, we understand that gentrification is just another word for ethnic cleansing. We understand perfectly and why this program is dedicated to those warriors of political prisoners that fought, and why we must defend them shows us we understand perfectly which way it must go. And we have associated with all of the organizations who fought for freedom in this country and around the world. as I had mentioned earlier in the program, the difference between black people we are enduring and Ho Chi Minh is victory at any cost. We have to learn that and apply it to ourselves. Victory at any cost. And we understand exactly what you're talking about. And no, we are not part of, and we are not fooled by anyone who says, I am a part of America. I started out from the very beginning, and if you listen to the statement I read at the beginning of every program, you will possibly reconsider what you had said about the intent of our program and the designs of the people who come on the program. Now, any of our, as Betty calls us, any of our usual suspects like to tune in on that and make comment on what you have just heard. It's 11 minutes after 10. Does anyone like to make comment on that?
Brother Ralph, I would like, this is Larry Pinkney speaking, and I definitely want to make a comment.
Let me be
clear about this. We are not fools, and we are not fooled. We are not fools, and we are not fooled. We understand the struggles all around the world, all around Mother Earth. We will not be divided. We will not allow ourselves to be pitted one against the other. Whatever that noise is, I hope it goes away. Can you hear me, brother?
Yes, I can hear you. Betty's going to try to remove the noise. Go ahead. Continue.
All right. The bottom line is this. When I say all power to the people, I am only saying that which is obvious. Black, white, brown, red, yellow. Last week I pointed out on the program that as a former political prisoner, I was in prison with none other than my dear brother, Leonard Peltier, one of the leaders of the American Indian Movement. What I did not point out was that while I was in prison, I was also elected as the vice president of the Indigenous Native Brotherhood, quote-unquote, organization in prison. Because we understood, and I say we, all of us, understood that we are in this struggle together. Yes, they know that, and I say they, I mean my brothers and sisters, my Indigenous Native brothers and sisters knew that there is Indigenous blood in my veins. But you know what's more important is the blood in my veins is called human blood. Black, white, brown, red, and yellow. I will not subordinate myself to hatred of particular people. There is not but one race. There is only one race. You have never heard me say, nor will I ever say, white race, black race, brown race, red race. There is the human race. Humans. And we must come to understand, like it or not, as Bobby Seale used to say, like it or not, we must come to understand that we are in this struggle together. There is no doubt that there is white racism. And that white racism has been at the root of so many debaucherous and horrible things. But let us not forget John Brown. Let us not forget John Brown's three sons. Let us not forget the martyrs whose pigmentation also happened to be white. It is time for us to grow up, to mature, and to deal with the horrors that have been placed upon us. That is basically all I have to say. And again, I will end what I have to say to all of my brothers and sisters of all colors, all power to the people, all power to the people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow.
And thank you for that, Larry. And as I was told many, many years ago, by a woman named Queen Mother Moore, that the job of the oppressor is to oppress. The job of the oppressed is to fight for freedom. And the best way to fight for freedom is for those who understand what freedom is worth to join hands to fight for that freedom. And freedom is the same everywhere, and oppression has different names, and it is the same everywhere. We have other line, other voices on the line, and so those who would like to chime in, just tune in, because we have opened up all mics.
518, first three digits, 518. Last four digits, 5633. You have 1 to 2 minutes to comment, please, if you're still on the line.
Okay, it is not necessary that you comment. There's another one. Go to the next one, Betty.
202, first three digits. 202, last four digits. 6489. Are you there? Hello? Okay, 631, last four digits, 5842.
Yeah, this is Anna with the Strongheart Warrior Society, the Independent Lakota Nation. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. You know, Snoopa was just offering some understanding, and I have to say I feel a little disturbed by the response that he got. And, you know, I'd just like to offer up something to consider as you move forward in this conversation, both tonight and as it goes forward, and that is, this land that we're talking on, this land that we're talking about, this is First Nations land. This is Indigenous land. And I'm wondering, I've heard our brothers and sisters on this call talk passionately, and I respect that passion. I respect your experience. And at the same time, I keep wondering, when are First Peoples going to be put first? Because this is Indigenous land. And, you know, Brother Pinkney, you're right. Yes, this is one human race. But at the same time, for Indigenous people, that is often used as erasure. So when Indigenous people are not put first, when their voices are continually marginalized to more than any other group, when their issues are continually ignored, underfunded, under-recognized, not recognized, there is an ongoing level of genocide that is not even being recognized. And so we have people like my brother, Chinupa, who are trying to say to you and to say to many other people, please look close. And I hear the brothers and sisters on this call say, yes, we recognize, you know, we understand. And yes, I believe there is a level of understanding, and I also believe there's a level of not understanding. And that's up for every one of these people on this call to come to terms with, whether that's true or not. But in my experience of doing this work for a very long time, I'm hearing that. And so I continue to, I just want to say one more time, when will the First Peoples of this land, which is Turtle Island, it's not America, it's not the United States of America, it's Turtle Island, when will the First Peoples of this place get put first? Because continually, in all of these movements for social justice, in all these progressive and radical movements, Indigenous people continually be put last. They continue to be ignored. And you know what happens in these conversations? Someone will say, oh, yeah, Leonard Peltier, or, oh, yeah, this person. You know, they'll toss out an Indigenous name. They'll name drop. They'll drop an issue. But there's no depth to it. It's just superficial recognition. It's tokenism at its very worst. And I keep wondering, when are Indigenous people going to be put first on our land?
And well, wait, one at a time.
I hope that the brothers and sisters on this phone call will open up your hearts and consider what I have to say, whether you agree with it right now or not. I just hope that you will consider what I have to say, because, you know, I have a lot of years of doing this work and a lot of experience of seeing and hearing these very sorts of conversations happening. And so I really, really do hope that, what I'm offering will be considered with your heart and scare.
Yes.
May I respond?
May I? Yes, you may. I'm going to have you right on, and I'm going to make a short response here. Not only will we recognize what you have said, our lives have recognized by what we do what you have said. I will go to Lynn Stewart, who represented indigenous people, who has a reputation for giving them the same representation, that is, those warrior societies who fight the empire the same as we do. We recognize them and with our lives fight alongside them. Myself, I have a history that says I am not involved in words, I'm involved in deeds. Larry Pinckney, who will speak for himself, we are not new to this. We have been doing this for 50 years. And, of course, one of the things that I have said to people over and over years, the people who have suffered more than black people on this Turtle Island are the indigenous people here who are dead. And we're continuing the death. And they have spread this death not only from the Indians and the indigenous people. I say, who's next? We are next. Gentrification, ethnic cleansing, it's the same. Denial of water, it's the same. And we have fought it. And I'm going to give Larry, who has said he come in, and I will shut up. Larry, go ahead. Tell us what you were thinking.
First, I thank you, my brother. I want to say to the brother who spoke before me, before you, Ralph, that, of course.
Actually, your sister, but that's okay.
Was it a sister?
Okay. Fine.
Well, let me say brothers and sisters, because I'm talking about, anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is my brothers and sisters, who are indigenous native peoples, we must understand that African peoples are also indigenous peoples. We were brought here not under a passport. We didn't go through Ellis Island. We were not stamped and said, now you are an American. Let us understand. I've studied my history and I know it well. Let us understand the Crazy Snake Rebellion. Look it up. If you haven't, read about it. The Crazy Snake Rebellion was where an indigenous native chief came together with blacks in this country who rebelled against the U.S. cavalry and fought for approximately 20 years against the oppression not only of indigenous native peoples, and I say peoples because there were many nations of indigenous peoples in this land. I didn't say country, I said land. And I understand that we're not talking about America. As I said last week, we understand that they named this territory America after an Italian, Amerigo Vespucci. I know my history. I want us to understand that we must be in this struggle together, because we are in this struggle to not only improve the lot of our many peoples, but we are in this struggle to change for the better Mother Earth. We are her protectors, and that's what this is about. So all power to the people. Again, I say that. I say that not in sarcasm. I say it from the depths of my heart. I have been chained to bars. I have been beaten physically for standing up for my indigenous native brothers and sisters. And yes, my grandmother happens to be full-blooded native, indigenous native. But that's neither here nor there, because even if she were not, God knows I wish I would do, I hope I would do, the same thing for any human of any color. With that, I will finish what I have to say. But I am touched deeply by those who spoke before me, my brothers and my sisters and my brothers, all power to the people.
Thank you again for that, Larry. I'm going to look to Lynn, who has been there. Lynn, do you have any comments on what
yes,
you have
I'm
heard?
Here, and I feel saddened because I have seen this happen over and over within our progressive movement, that people are simply not looking at the long-range goal. I don't think any of our Native American brothers and sisters can doubt the sincerity of the movement we consider ourselves a part of, which is to restore the land to the Native people and to give Black people their fair share of what they've earned in this country by the sweat of their labors. It is about turf. That is what it is about. But we are not looking to take turf from Native Americans, and I don't believe they are looking. We all know who is in control. And for lack of a better characterization, we can say the power elite controls this country, and we must unite to fight them. If we cannot find common ground to fight this fearsome enemy, this enemy will continue as it has since 1492, since 1619, to dominate and control our lives. So I say I am sad when I hear the kind of rancor by our Native brothers here, because the fact of the matter is we are not the enemy. Our outlook is not their enemy. Our outlooks are both the same, that we fight a fearsome foe, and we must be united in that fight. If they can't unite with us, then we will fight alone. But we know who the enemy is, and I believe they know who the enemy is, and we can fight this together. Then we are strong. I don't want to get too impassioned, but I am saddened by that. The two gentlemen who were on, who both felt that somehow or other we were taking away from them. All people are part of our struggle. There is only one culture, and that is the culture of revolution. Thanks, Ralph.
Well said, Lynn, and thank you for that. And I think that we are just beginning to feel each other out, because I do understand that there are a lot of so-called movements out there of so-called progressive people who are not on our side. And one of the groups, I say, I'm loath to talk about color alone, because earlier in the program, I mentioned the preachers of color who have been selling us for a long time. We know from our association with the indigenous people that along with our Uncle Toms, we have Uncle and Aunt Tomahawks. You know about that. And so we talk about progressive people based on what we do. Turning it over to Betty.
In conclusion tonight, I want to remind people of what the brother from Black Lives Matter said. He said the Secret Service is in on this genocide, because that's what we're facing. And I want everybody to get their continent back. I want the turtle people to get their continent back. And as a person of African descent, I want my continent back. I want the continent of Africa back. And I can understand how the sister and the brother feel who are talking. But because I get my continent back does not mean that if I'm not running the fastest with the ball, I want to be a slave while I wait for myself to catch up. Whoever's running the fastest with the ball against capitalism and imperialism, I will follow them. I will follow you if you're running faster. Thank you.
You have just spent another evening with progressive people, and we will finish up with our song, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, and this goes for all people. We wish We knew how it would feel to be free, and we're going to fight to get there. Thank you and goodbye.
Oh,